Welcome to The Daily Diagnosis, a healthy lifestyle podcast provided by Ogden Clinic. We're your prescription for health-centered conversation, stories, and advice. Hosted by myself, Parker Shaw, and featuring the talented providers of Ogden Clinic, you'll reach a positive prognosis for your podcast addiction by listening to The Daily Diagnosis. All right, everybody, welcome to The Daily Diagnosis today. My name is Parker.
I'm April with Ogden Clinic's marketing team.
I'm Rocky Seal, OBGYN physician.
Awesome. We are so excited to have Dr. Fred Rocky Seal. As you said, he's an OBGYN physician for Ogden Clinic on the podcast today. So, Dr. Seal, we just want to get to know you and kind of get a good feel about you and your history with Ogden Clinic, where you're from. Let's just kind of dive into that.
Sure. So, you introduced me as Fred Rocky Seal, so that deserves some explanation. So, my real name is Fred. I'm actually a fourth generation. My name is Fred George Seal IV, named after my dad, his dad, his dad. So when I was born, the first was still alive, so they had to call me the fourth. They hadn't intended on it. But it gets even stranger because obviously my dad is Fred and his dad and his dad. But my mom's name is Freddie, named after her dad, Fred. Wow. So it got to be a little cumbersome to have all those Freds, so they came up with a nickname for me, and Rocky was a student that my mom had taught as a third grade teacher a couple of years before I was born, so that became my name, and I've just always gone by Rocky. I had the benefit of being 10 years old when the movie Rocky came out.
Yes.
There are very few things that could have happened better for a 10-year-old boy to have that movie come out, so all of a sudden I had a theme song and all that, so I just, the name stuck, and I've just continued to go by that, but on official documents and things, it's Fred.
Awesome. That's really cool. So are you from Ogden area?
I am not. I'm a native Texan,
born
in Houston, and spent most of my life in Texas in the Houston area, and then went to undergraduate at Baylor University in Waco. Everybody knows Waco now because of Chip and JoJo, which is great. It used to just be David Koresh is what people knew, but now suddenly Waco is this hip town.
Right.
So I spent some time there and then in San Antonio and Dallas, just kind of all over Texas. And I was an Air Force physician and left Texas for 3 years to go to England, which was just a fantastic experience. And that sort of took me outside of the box a little bit, and my wife and kids and I thought, you know, where would we like to live? We like the mountains, we like to go skiing, so we cast a net out west and landed here, and that was coming up on 16 years ago.
Wow.
So,
no way.
Yeah, so it's been a good
always
experience.
In the Ogden area?
Always in the Ogden area.
Nice. Yep. It's a great place.
It is. It's a great place.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys landed here. So I guess, is your favorite part of the job delivering babies? Or
yes.
What would you say?
It definitely is. I mean, for the first 10 years, well, actually more like 13 years of my practice out of residency, I did the full spectrum of OBGYN. And that was one thing that I really liked about the specialty is that it's so varied. So in any given day, I would see clinic, kind of do some primary care. I might have a case in the OR, you know, gynecologic surgery, deliver a baby, you know, all this just in a single day. So you kind of got a bit of a feel for all areas of medicine, and I loved that. And then as I got busier and started to think about, you know, how to narrow things down, I went the exact opposite way that most people do. Most people kind of give up the obstetrics and concentrate on the surgical part, the gynecology part, because it's a little more predictable for the hours. But I just found that I really enjoyed the obstetrics so much that I pretty much hung up all of my GYN surgery about 6 years ago and just focused completely on obstetrics. And it was great. And now I'm actually making a move next spring where I'll close down my practice. I won't have my own practice, but I'll focus on doing hospital work, doing laborist shifts, and administering laborist programs.
That's really cool.
That's really interesting. We're going to miss you in the regular practice.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll still be around. You're not getting rid of me. It's not that easy.
But can you tell us a little bit more about Ogden Clinic's laborist program? Because a lot of people don't know what we do for expecting parents.
So the laborist model is something that's become very popular across the country over the past, I'd say, 10 years or so. And we kind of dove into that area about 6 years ago when I approached KD Hospital about starting a community-based laborist program, which was staffed by community physicians. So I've been sort of helping to oversee that program for the last 6 years. And then 5 years ago, 1 year into the McKay program, we developed a similar program at Ogden Regional. So we have an obstetrician who is physically in the hospital, available on labor and delivery 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the role is to kind of oversee what's happening on labor and delivery, to be available to help other physicians who are maybe tied up in their office or at home. And, you know, maybe they're only 5 minutes away, but a lot can happen in those 5 minutes if there's an emergency. So we're able to step in and kind of get the ball rolling for emergencies. We're there as a kind of an extension of the obstetrician to help them to do things during the course of labor to help facilitate the progress of labor. We're there to take care of patients who come in who don't have a doctor. We're there to help with high-risk transports. But it's just an element of safety for the patients. And it's a very rewarding amount of time spent. You know, if you enjoy that part of OBGYN and you like labor and delivery and like delivering babies, it's a great way to spend 24 hours.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That sounds really cool. Well, I'm glad that you're able to like even jazz things up and switch it up a little bit. That sounds like
I'm pretty fortunate awesome. To have that as an option. So I realize that. I realize, first of all, the privilege that it's been to have my practice for 20 years, including my England time in here. And I recognize that it's pretty unique that I have the option to kind of change gears like I am at this point in my career.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, so Dr. Steele, I'm sure that as working as an OBGYN, you've had to have had some sort of amazing, funny delivery stories. Do you have any that come to mind?
A lot of amazing stories and a lot of funny stories. And one that really comes to mind is a delivery that I did for a patient. It was her, I believe, 9th baby.
Wow.
And all of her previous kids were in the room. Which, you know, there are lots of differences in what people prefer in their birthing experience. They may want to be completely alone just with them and their husband or partner. Sometimes there are some friends. Sometimes there's a photographer. Sometimes there are lots of friends. Sometimes there are lots of family. This was probably the biggest crowd. So I went from working like small theaters to arenas. You know, it got to be like big crowd kind of thing. But So the kids range from about 20 years old to 2 years old.
Oh my God.
And they were all so involved and wrapped up in this experience. It was wonderful. And as I was actually attending to the delivery, I noticed, I looked down and the little 3-year-old or so is standing right next to me eating out of a box of Teddy Graham crackers.
watching
a movie. And looked up and said, "Mommy, I can see your butt." And I just thought, how does that even happen?
That's so funny.
It was just incredibly cute and charming. And, you know, most of my stories involve, you know, the word butt or something. But I figured that was okay to add in.
That's really sweet.
Family friendly.
Whole family came out to support mom.
It's kind of cute.
It was. I don't know if that would have been my choice for the crowd if I were in that situation, but it was very cute, very touching.
That's awesome. All right, one more kind of patient question along those lines. Tell me about a patient that touched your heart, and tell me about a patient that changed your practice.
Sure. So, I mean, so many. What I do is, I have the privilege of being involved in the most important, you know, one of the most important times of somebody's life with the birth of their children, and sometimes. You know, most of the time, thankfully, that's a joyous event, but occasionally it's a very sad event. And I can remember very early in my training helping a patient through a term stillbirth that was just completely unexpected. And, you know, her due date was approaching and she came to clinic and there was no heartbeat. And this was the first time that I had experienced that. And it was a very emotional process of going through the delivery. And I just remember, you know, at that point, I had probably had a few hundred deliveries under my belt, and this one was just so different. The room was so quiet. You could hear everybody sniffling, including myself and all the nurses, and it was just extremely powerful. And I became very close to that patient, and she actually, you know, my residency was only 4 years long. I think this happened in my second year of residency, and then she got pregnant again and was going to deliver near the end of my final year. And I was actually on a remote rotation at the time, And my department chairman allowed me to come back to specially attend her delivery.
That's really sweet.
Mm-hmm. And I just remember that like it was yesterday, and that was 20 years ago.
Wow.
But cool. Yeah, that was very, very special. And I mean, it's hard to choose, but you know, another patient who I've delivered many babies for, her entire family, since I've been here in town, but initially she went through 4 consecutive miscarriages, and she had never had a delivery, a live birth. And you know, every time she came in and was pregnant, and our hopes were up and things looked good, and the next time she came in and just everything, you know, hopes were dashed, and it was just so so tough going through that with her. But you know, then she came in and we had good news, and the next time it was good news, and the next time, and she delivered a beautiful baby, and now we've had multiple successful deliveries, and she has this beautiful family. And it doesn't seem that long ago that every time I saw her, you know, there was just this fear that it was going to be very sad. But now because of that, it's just one of the most joyous things to see her.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's an amazing story.
No, those are both really
awesome.
It's
amazing that she didn't give up hope on it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That's a very tough thing, especially never having had a successful pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's perfect. Thanks for sharing those. Mm-hmm. So I guess with these last couple minutes or few minutes that we have, kind of diving into our topic for today's podcast, we wanted to talk to you about something that's pretty specific to what you kind of support as a doctor in an OBGYN, which is natural family planning. And would you want to go into that and talk about some different aspects of that our listeners would like to hear about?
Sure. I became very interested in advocating for natural family planning in my practice about 12 years ago now. And some of it I stemmed from the fact that I started to have a few misgivings about artificial birth control and how it sometimes works, that there is the possibility of called a secondary mechanism of action, where most of the time birth control methods work by preventing conception. They prevent the egg and the sperm from meeting, and therefore no pregnancy occurs. But there are some changes that can occur as a result of birth control methods to the lining of the uterus, for example, that may make it less likely for a pregnancy to be able to implant once it's conceived. And I have a very strong belief that life begins at conception and deserves respect until the time of natural death. And I had to really think, you know, to myself, how can I justify this in my practice? And I have to at least become realistic about the fact that sometimes these methods can work that way. And if I'm going to think that way, I have to have an alternative. And natural family planning is the alternative that sort of fulfills any sort of, you know, possibly religious concerns somebody might have about birth control. So that was really one of the first reasons why I looked into it. And we don't get very much training at all in this in medical school or in residency. And I think part of it is because really we think of it as just the calendar method or the rhythm method, and we think that, you know, it's really not that effective, which truly those methods are not that effective. It's not a one-size-fits-all method, but the more modern methods of natural family planning are very effective, as effective as birth control pills, in fact, and can appeal to someone for a number of reasons. First of all, just the fact that while birth control pills work very well, and some people really even like the way they feel on them, not everybody does. Some people have side effects that they say, you know, I become a different person. I kind of have some nausea, that sort of thing. So I wish there was something that I could do besides birth control pills. And so this is a great option for someone to say, well, you know, there is a method that if you are willing to kind of make the observations, and if you and your husband are kind of on board and can go, you know, obey the rules, if there's something telling you that you might be in a fertile part of the cycle and your intention is not to get pregnant that month, that you either avoid intercourse or use other methods and that type of thing. So if you have a partner who's on board with you and you're able to make the observations, it can be very, very effective as birth control pills without taking something into your body that you don't need. And a lot of people are very interested in that. They'd rather not take a medication if they don't have to. So this is a very attractive option for a lot of reasons. And I have to admit, when I was first learning the method and starting to advocate it in my practice, I probably had a little bit of the bias that maybe these were not the most effective methods. But as I started learning more and reading about this particular method, I had confidence that it was. And I can say now, with 12 years of experience of lots of my patients using this method and lots of them being interested in using it, I can count on one finger the time where there was a true surprise pregnancy.
Wow.
I can count many more of people who were using birth control pills or IUDs where there was, an unexpected pregnancy. So I can really say with confidence that I'm offering a very effective method that, may satisfy a lot of different needs for people. The need to have a method that works without taking something artificial into the body or something that maybe causes side effects that they're not crazy about. And also anybody who does have concerns from a religious standpoint or just thinking, I'm not crazy about the idea that my method might be working like that sometimes, then they have an option that they can go to.
I think that more and more women are wanting to get off medication. I keep seeing that, especially on a lot of people who are on birth control or on it for decades or longer.
Right.
And that's a concern for a lot of women too.
It is true. And, I think that, there are some concerns about being on a medication for 20 years plus, which oftentimes would be the case with birth control pills. I still counsel my patients that they are safe. They're
mm-hmm.
safe and effective. And there are other things that they can be used for too, other than contraception, the birth control pills and some of the progesterone-containing intrauterine devices can be used to treat other conditions. So I would never tell somebody that they're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, there are risks associated with birth control pills. People do develop blood clots, and these things happen. Anybody that practices family medicine or obstetrics and prescribes birth control pills can say that they've certainly seen patients who've developed deep venous thrombosis or pulmonary embolism, which is attributed to that. Now, that's a rare side effect, but it's something to think about. And if you'd rather not take something long-term, like you said, or something that causes side effects or causes you worry about something like DVT or PE, there are options.
Yeah.
So what we hear a lot, or at least what I see sometimes in the media, is that the calendar method is a little bit risky, especially where if you don't want to become pregnant, that's a pretty big risk if you do. And so can you speak a little bit more about how natural family planning is different from just kind of tracking the way that we are maybe used to?
Sure. So the calendar method or the rhythm method makes some assumptions that every woman has a 28-day cycle. And so 28 days is the average, but everybody lives on a bell curve. And so somebody might have cycles that are more like 24 days or 34 days, or some people may have a 28-day cycle this month and a 34 next month, and maybe they go 3 months between their next. And so if you're only using the calendar days and saying, okay, my period started, and so in 14 days, that's when I'm going to ovulate, so I just need to avoid right around that time, well, if you're fortunate enough that your cycle is always 28 days, then you might do pretty well with that, but it doesn't fit most people. So the method that I'm most familiar with that I advocate for my patients is called the Creighton model. And it involves a daily observation. So all it involves is just an observation of vaginal discharge. So when you go to the bathroom and you're wiping anyway, you make an observation of, Does it feel dry? Is there some discharge? Is there some lubrication there? You're looking for sort of a mucousy, almost egg white type of discharge. And that starts to show up a couple of days or a few days before ovulation occurs. And it's a very, very good predictor of ovulation. So if your period only comes every 3 months, well, most of the days when you're checking, everything's going to be dry. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks or so before that next period is going to come, you have no way of knowing when that would be otherwise, but you'll start seeing some of these signs that suggest fertility. And so that's what you base your decision. And the idea is that this is not necessarily only contraceptive or against conception, it's family planning. So whether your intention is, hey, you know, it would be a good time for us to have a baby, then you know when the best time is to light the candles, have the romantic evening, right? But if you've got a new baby and you're not ready for another, then this is an indication that, you know, if you do have unprotected intercourse, that you are likely to, you know, this would be the time where you would likely get pregnant. So it can be used in both directions. Now, the thing I like about the Creighton model, it's very, very effective, and this is the only observation that needs to be made. You don't need to be checking your temperature first thing in the morning, and you don't need to be doing ovulation predictor kits, all these things that you could add to your observations, and a lot of people do, but interpreting basal body temperature measurements, for example, can be kind of tricky, and that's more of a retrospective. So when your basal body temperature starts to go up, that means you have already ovulated. Mm-hmm. So you can't, if you're using that as your signal to say, well, this is when we need to start using protection or avoiding intercourse, you've already had some very fertile days before that is going to happen.
Right.
The observation of the discharge is more of a prospective observation.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I have one more question. If a woman is on some type of birth control now, can she immediately come off and then begin the natural family planning method, or is there like some time to kind of recalibrate, for lack of a better word?
Pretty much you can start right away. Now, birth control pills and some of the hormonal methods might change the quality of the cervical mucus slightly, but typically that's going to go back to its normal cycling once the normal cycling of the ovaries comes back.
Right.
So some methods, for example, if somebody uses Depo-Provera, it can take a year sometimes from the last shot before they start ovulating again. But in that setting, if they're doing these observations that I'm talking about, they should notice just
will tell you.
Dry day, you know, until, and then one day they'll notice, whoa, looks like I'm having a return of fertility. And then the nice thing also is there are people in our community who are trained as coaches and counselors in the Creighton model that can do teaching, and you can either be very informal about this, or you can be very formal and chart, and you know, there can be some pretty elaborate charting systems if you want to use them that can tell you not only about when you're in your fertile interval, but they can also tell you sometimes about different cycle problems, different you know, things that might be present if you're having kind of unusual cycles. We can glean some information from those charts. So anybody who really wants to formally engage in this, I can put them in contact with either Brittany or Jennifer, two counselors we have locally that can help them. It'd be a great resource to kind of help them to interpret their charts.
It's great that Ogden Clinic has that resource available locally.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess to wrap things up, we can definitely include that information in the description that we have on this podcast episode. And if anybody does have or wants to get any more information about Dr. Seal or Ogden Clinic or the natural family planning, we can definitely provide that through visiting us at ogdenclinic.com. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of The Daily Diagnosis. If you like today's episode, leave us a comment in the section below or share us with your friends on your Instagram story. We'd really appreciate a review as well. We hope that you have a great week. We post our podcast once a week on Tuesdays and can't wait to share next week's episode with you. Take care and have an awesome week.